You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio, 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, October 4th, 2017.
Where we're bringing in these global artists into schools. And so we're really excited to, you know, welcome folks from everywhere to Bloomington.
Coming up later in the program, WFHB correspondent Jada Lucas speaks with Lotus Festival director Megan Hutchinson about what this year's Lotus Festival brought to Bloomington.
Also coming up in the next half hour, soaring prices of cryptocurrencies are enticing for investors, but as Richard Fish warns, some currencies aren't all they appear. That story coming up on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
Obstacles to both funding and design of an affordable housing apartment complex in Bloomington are pushing its completion date into late 2019. The city contracted with PEDCOR Investments in 2016 to develop affordable, energy-efficient housing for families making 60% or less of the area's median income. Brandon Delk, Vice President of Development for PEDCOR, told the Bloomington Redevelopment Commission on Monday that delays are being caused by changes in the corporate tax rate. Delk says those changes negatively influence the value of tax credits PEDCOR investors would receive.
So just as a refresher, this deal has $750,000 of annual low-income housing tax credits associated with it. And those tax credits are used against federal tax liabilities, that is.
Delk says PEDCOR lost over $1 million in funding for the affordable housing project on North Rogers Street. Delk told the Redevelopment Commission those losses forced PEDCOR to redesign the housing project and find new investors. Delk went on to describe a number of changes to the original design that was approved by the Redevelopment Commission last year. The building has been reduced from 4 stories to 3, and the number of units has dropped from 36 to 34. An indoor business center and an outdoor terrace were replaced with an internet cafe. A planned water recycling system that would have recycled water from showers and sinks to flush toilets was also scrapped.
Another item that came out of the budget was the geothermal HVAC systems with heat pumps. Again, those are approximately $30,000 a unit, and we replaced those with a mini split system from Carrier at cost from the manufacturer for a little less than $5,000 a unit.
What Delk didn't initially disclose to the Redevelopment Commission until he was asked about it was the elimination of the proposed affordable housing project's elevator. Delk told Commission member David Walter that the elevator could be eliminated because the first and second floors will have ground level entry due to the slope of the lot. Walter took issue with the fact that 20 apartments on the third floor will be left with only stairwell access.
I suggest you carry your groceries up 3 flights of stairs and see how often you like doing that and taking your laundry up and down the flights of stairs. And that elevator, I think, was essential to make this workable. I understand you're cutting costs, but what I'm seeing here is bait and switch. This is really nice. This is what we're going to build for you. Now you come to us today and you say, we're putting up a gray building that's basically rectangular. There's been some changes and loss. I'm really not liking this. I understand we need affordable housing, but if you build cheap, it's going to be cheap. It's going to be taken care of like it's cheap, and then we'll be back there trying to fix it later. So I really do not like this.
Delk countered that it was not his intention to bait and switch the Redevelopment Commission and said efforts have been made to ensure quality building materials are used and that the proposed housing complex would maintain its street appeal. Delk said the design also retains elements required by the Bloomington Planning Commission, such as parking spaces and bike racks. As for maintenance, Delk argued that Pedcor's reputation as the long-term owner of the property ensures its upkeep.
It's our reputation going up on this building as well, so I want something that will look as best as it possibly can. But I'm also going to maintain that asset because after 15, 20, 30 years, that's still going to be in our portfolio and it still needs to hold value.
Walter maintains the site plan could still come back from the state level review with a requirement for an elevator. He warned Delk to be prepared for the possibility of yet another redesign, which would change the timeline once again. Commission Chair Donald Griffin had no qualms with the new design, saying the project, quote, opens the door for a lot of working class folks, unquote.
On a per bedroom basis, what's your target on price per bedroom?
Those haven't changed. I believe it was $625 for one, $675 for two, and $845 for a three.
The amended agreement approved Monday night puts the groundbreaking in March of 2018, with inspection by the city's Housing and Neighborhood Development Department projected for September 2019. Walter was the only commission member to vote against the amended agreement.
Plans to build a second apartment complex on South Walnut Street have been put on hold. The proposed Urban Station 2 complex would be situated next to Urban Station 1, the apartment complex currently being built on the former site of the Chocolate Moose. Planning Director Terry Porter told the Bloomington Plan Commission during its Monday meeting that planning staff did not recommend developer HM Mack's proposal for the second apartment project. Porter said she's concerned about the project's architectural design and blockish structure, which she refers to as massing, quote-unquote, as well as the developer's lack of commitment to green building practices.
It's difficult for staff to see this project as anything but another large, boxy student housing project in the downtown. We're concerned about the composition of the units, which include 12 five-bedroom units and 6 four-bedroom units. We want to be fair to Mr. Steve Hoffman and HM Mack. We want to be fair to him and his firm to give them honest feedback, very honest feedback, rather than have him continue to tweak the project and modify a project that has no chance of success.
The four-story mixed-use complex is planned for the 300 block of South Walnut Street, adjacent to the original Urban Station. The project school is located to the south. Middleway House is located to the east. Project plans call for commercial space on the ground floor, with three stories of apartments above ranging from 1 to 5 bedroom units. The design is dominated by metal and concrete panels on the upper stories and features recessed light wells, which Porter says will not allow enough natural light into the apartments. Architect Craig McCormick said he had been asked by Steve Hoffman of HM Mack to produce a more urban design.
When Mr. Hoffman came to us, what he asked for was a type of apartment building, a mixed-use building that's more like some of the new modern developments that we're doing in other cities, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Louisville, quite a few other cities within maybe a few hours of Indianapolis and where we are today. Those buildings, I think, are a more modern spirit to them. We certainly appreciate the development guidelines from Bloomington and some of the requirements with use of limestone and brick and the different materialities of it. But what we were asked to do was to kind of bring something new and different and more contemporary as a design to this project.
Hoffman says Porter's criticisms are the first feedback he's gotten on the project, though the city has had his proposal for more than 2 months. Hoffman pushed back on the design criticisms.
Do we want another red brick and limestone building in our downtown with green caps? This is interesting architecture.
Hoffman and HM Mack say they will incorporate green business practices on the project. In exchange, they're asking to be allowed to increase the number of apartments by 25%. Planning Director Terry Porter.
The Environmental Commission report states that the intentions of receiving the bonus have not been met. However, our architectural firm believes that they probably have met it, but just marginally. There's a lot more that the project could happen to the project to make it much greener.
Hoffman responded, saying few developers in town make the effort to use green building practices. He said HM Mack wants to demonstrate to local developers that green building can be done in a for-profit building model. Commission member Isabel Piedmont-Smith pushed back, saying HM Mack had not met all the green building requirements set out in the Unified Development Ordinance, or UDO.
They're not even committing to recycling. I mean, what? I just don't understand them espousing, oh, we're doing all these things that nobody else does. I don't buy it. The green building portion of the UDO is very clear. You have to have two items from goal one and one each from goals 2, 3, and 4. And I looked at the UDO, and I could see maybe they have one from goal one, although it's not spelled out. The reuse of salvage construction materials, it has to be at least 50%. They said they would reuse some. I don't know what percentage. I didn't see any second implementation measure under goal one. Goal two is not met at all, as far as I could tell. That's the landscaping and site design. Now, granted, they don't have much landscaping, and there's not much required because of the location. Goal three and goal four are just kind of a given because it's mixed use. Okay, well, of course it's mixed use. It has to be mixed use. And it's right near the transit station, so that's just their luck. So I really don't see that they're going out of their way to make this a sustainable project. And they haven't met the minimum to get that 25% increased density.
Piedmont Smith joined Commission members Heather Maritano, Nicholas Kappas, and Jillian Kinsey in expressing concerns about the project's design and mass. Maritano took issue with the project's big city feel, referencing the fact that the city is in the process of revising its comprehensive master plan.
My ears perked up a little bit in terms of the big city feel and in comparisons to Indianapolis and Cincinnati. And this is at the edge of downtown Bloomington core, and we are not Indianapolis and we are not Cincinnati. So that comparison also doesn't excite me. It seems actually in the opposite direction of where I think we're going with the new plans.
Kinsey questioned the city's current trend of allowing the massing of large blocked buildings, terming it an over-reliance on a common design and size.
This is the concern that I think we're trying to address. What's the right balance to keep moving, you know, to four-story buildings, I think, is a concern. So I guess I want to understand a little bit more about, is that always going to be the answer? Now that we're going to move to four stories and it's going to have a lot of beds or bedrooms.
Kinsey and Commission member Andrew Seabor encouraged others to consider how the project will impact neighboring businesses, residences, and schools. Early in the meeting, Middleway House Executive Director Morrow recounted complaints she's received from clients that their children are often frightened by noise and cussing they hear in the middle of the night as groups of students walk home from partying. She also said a balcony many clients view as a safe place will be in full view of Urban Station 2 residents. A partnership between HM Mack and Rhino's Youth Center would relocate Rhino's to the bottom floor of the new complex and allow Rhino's to operate there rent-free. But the proposed partnership was not enough to outweigh commission members' concerns. For WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithfield's Home Automation Service is available at smithfieldsecurity.com.
The 42nd Annual Lotus Festival wrapped up this past weekend, bringing artists from all over the world to downtown Bloomington. WFHB correspondent Jada Lucas spoke with Lotus Developmental Director Megan Hutchinson about Lotus's diversity in artists and opinions.
My name is Jada Lucas, reporting for WFHB. This weekend, Bloomington hosted its 42nd year of the Lotus Festival. The festival is hosted by the city, as well as the Lotus Education and Arts Foundation. Megan Hutchinson, the developmental director, says the festival is an important tool to start conversations about cultures and diversity in Bloomington. Hutchinson says there are a lot of female performers contributing to the diversity.
We're really excited to bring lots of women to the stage this year, for sure.
What are some of your favorite artists that are in the lineup this year?
Oh my goodness, that's really hard. But personally for me, I really like to dance, and so I'm very excited about five women called La Dama. They're coming to this stage Friday, Saturday, and at Lotus in the Park. I'm also really looking forward to Betsaida Machado from Venezuela. I got to see her today at Fairview Elementary School, and she had those kids dancing and singing. It was really wonderful to see.
What do you see in the future of Lotus? How do you think it's going to evolve in the future?
Well, I think that that really depends on who's involved, you know? So we're always changing and adapting based on our community, and our community is big, you know? These people that have dedicated their lives to helping us every year bring this program, and also our school program in the springtime, Blossoms, where it's a similar thing where we're bringing in these global artists into schools. And so we're really excited to, you know, welcome folks from everywhere to Bloomington and learn from each other.
My last question is, do you feel like having these different cultures specifically has a great impact on children, especially?
I definitely think so. You know, we have high school students that come to the festival, and we do a little orientation with them on, like, how to experience Lotus and the questions to ask and how to decide which artists to see and conversations around the artists that come. And in with Lotus Blossoms, we're doing the same. We're working with teachers that are tying their curriculum to the performances and engagements that they have with artists, and especially in rural communities in Indiana where they might not get to see an Iraqi oud player. It's something different, and we hope that that's one piece of the puzzle that creates cultural understanding in our community.
One of the other diverse acts that was presented at the festival was Ethio jazz singer McLee. McLee's music combines both a mixture of Ethio jazz, hip-hop, rap, and even folk music.
My name is McLeet Ayele Hadero, but I go by McLeet because that's enough. I'm from Ethiopia. I was born in Addis Ababa, but I left when I was about 2 years old, and we went to Germany very briefly and then landed in D.C., and then I did, we lived 4 years in Iowa, 6 years in Brooklyn, a year in Jacksonville, Florida, 5 years in Gainesville, Florida, 4 years in New Haven, Connecticut, a summer in London, a summer in Miami, 2 years in Seattle, and now 13 years in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I like to say that where I'm from is a paragraph, not a sentence.
And do you feel like all of those places had different influences on your music?
Absolutely. I mean, really, it's the three cities that are my touchstones: Addis Ababa, Brooklyn, and San Francisco. And so those three cities are the three sides that really make up my music: Ethiopian traditional music and Ethio jazz, American jazz, and singer-songwriters, storytelling, and strum.
How would you define Ethio jazz?
Well, I think it's being redefined. You know, I think Mulatu Astatke is the godfather of Ethio jazz, and he created the genre back in the 60s. And I actually wrote this album after he and I had a conversation in 2011. And he came to a show of mine with my band in Addis Ababa, and he took me aside after the show, and he said, oh, you know, he talks really, really, really softly. And so you have to lean in to listen to him. It's a pretty cool way to way to have a conversation because it engages people. So he said to me, you know, why are you playing Ethio Jazz like we played it 45 years ago? He said, what's your contribution to this music? How are you going to take this music forward? You need to keep innovating. He said, Ethio Jazz to him, the way that he created it was bringing together a sense of Western harmony, which is the way that jazz music uses chords, with the sense of pentatonic music of Ethiopia. And Ethiopia has several pentatonic scales that really make up the kind of skeletal structure of what that music is. So he said his Ethio Jazz was the 12 against the 5, the 12-tone scale against the 5-tone scale. But he said, me, I could make my own contribution according to my own life and what I thought I could bring to the table. So Ethio Jazz is evolving.
You can tell music is definitely a part of your life, and I wonder, how did you first get into music and realize this was your passion?
It's a funny thing because it was really about listening to my inner voice, because I always wanted to do music. And so it was a question of, like, how much was I going to allow that inner voice to lead my life? And I didn't really think it was possible when I was younger, and I saw people, like, kind of, you know, either going a really academic route where they didn't really, where they seemed to be like punitively practicing all the time, or not that practicing all the time is bad, like now I do the same thing, but back then it looked like nobody wanted to do it and they were doing it, and then there was also this other thing which was a cult of fame that people were going after, and I didn't really want to do that either. So it wasn't until I moved to the Bay Area and met all these artists who were using their artwork to deeply engage with the world around them that I said, oh, that's how I can do it. That's how I can make this in a music in a meaningful way. And from there, it just took off.
According to Hutchinson, Lotus will continue to search for diverse artists for future Lotus festivals.
That was WFHB correspondent Jada Lucas speaking with FEO Jazz artist McLeet and Lotus Development Director Megan Hutchinson.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Money. Have I got your attention? Money is an idea. It's not really those pieces of metal and paper you carry around. Money is a concept, and a really good one. Money is something that everyone agrees is worth something, a medium of exchange for balancing and healing debts, a convenient way to do business. There have been lots of kinds of money floating around for thousands of years. Coins made of gold and silver, paper money backed by a government. On the Pacific island of Yap, they even used giant coins carved out of stone that weighed more than a car. I don't know how they made change. Today, most of your money is probably just numbers on a piece of paper or on a computer screen, and now there's a new kind of money called cryptocurrency. Bitcoin was the first, but there are now over 30 cryptocurrencies with names like Ethereum, Aurora Coin, Gridcoin, and Zcash, and others are popping up. Cryptocurrency is international and decentralized. That means there's no bank or government issuing or regulating it, and transactions cannot be traced. But you can convert crypto money into other kinds of money, including U.S. dollars. Digital money that works like cash. Sounds great, doesn't it? Cryptocurrencies have been surging in value as more and more people want them. A single Bitcoin was $1 when it started, and today it's worth about $4,000. Well, as you'd expect if you're a listener to this column, fraudsters are swarming into this new field. For instance, a guy named Maxim Zeslavsky started a cryptocurrency called RECoin, claiming it was backed by real estate. Last week, the Securities and Exchange Commission froze his assets and charged him with fraud for claiming he'd raised a lot more investment dollars than he really had, and that his RE coins could be swapped for diamonds without actually being able to do that. Then there's Lydian Coin, which was endorsed last month by Paris Hilton. Its founder, one Gurbakhsh Shahal, has been convicted of violently abusing his girlfriend. But he's looking for investors in Lydian Coin while he's waiting to see if he's going to be hauled off to prison. Come on, anything endorsed by a celebrity who's famous for something else is nothing you want to get involved in. If a tennis champion endorses a tennis racket, that's one thing, but Paris Hilton's financial expertise is confined to shopping on Rodeo Drive, and this is a whole different kind of racket. Cryptocurrencies are too new to be anything but a big, fat risk for anyone investing in them. Their cybersecurity is also in its infancy. And if your bitcoins are stolen, there is literally no one you can call. And the people who want you to pay in bitcoin are usually crooks, like the ones who hold computers for ransom. Money is an idea. And so far, cryptocurrency is not a good one. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Sarah Vaughn in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Jada Lucas.
Our engineer today, Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.